ask for a roll call, please?
Chair Wolf?
Here. Yeah.
Director Banks? Director Darcy?
Here.
Director Dotson? Director Gonzalez?
Here.
Director Peterson?
Here.
Director Reddick?
Here.
Director Sweeney?
Here.
Director Weisner?
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I believe Director Dotson is on his way. So we will begin. I'm sure he will forgive us. I have not seen the clips, but I understand that we do have some people here who would like to make public comments. Thank you. Okay. We have Mr. Donner, who has some materials that will be distributed as he is speaking. We have Gabriela Garcia. We have Beth Doria. We have Robert Israel. Do you have a new name? Barker. And Clayton Pryor. So we'll go in that order. I would just remind our speakers that we would appreciate it if they will keep their remarks concise. We do want to hear everything you say, but we do have a number of speakers today. I also want to remind you there's a camera there and a microphone, and this is being streamed and will be available at our website. Thank you. So you're being recorded for posterity. Make it good. Okay, so we'll start with Mr. Garman. Oh, yes. Good morning.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here again to speak with this group about speed limits. I've been here a couple of times before. My name is Steve Doner. I'm with the National Motorists Association. And I think either today or soon, you're going to be presented with a recommendation, a set of recommended speed limits for the tollway system, the urban limits, and I'm here to tell you, to give you some reasons why we think that posting a limit less than 70 anywhere in the Metro Chicago area will compromise the safety of your users. And I think we all have the same goal in that regard. There's a handout that hopefully made its way around. There's a couple extras over there on the side table that I'd like to. There's four separate stapled attachments besides the script, each of which has a summary sheet on top. I'm not going to read it to you, but I'd like to just comment briefly about what's in these documents and encourage you to look through it on your own later. The first says something like U.S. Department of Transportation sanctioned software recommends speed limit of 70 to 75 miles per hour for the tollway system throughout Chicago. And if you look at this and just flip through the pages, look at the bottom of each page. This is an output report from this software program from the U.S. Department of Transportation. RWA Associates, your engineers, input tollway data, including tollway crash data, into this into the system, and this is the recommended limits that U.S. Limits 2 is suggesting should be posted for all the segments that were looked at, the urban segments. So I present that as sort of witness or exhibit number one, and I would encourage you to greet with skepticism any recommendation for a limit below 70 miles per hour for anywhere on the tollway system based on this. The second document is entitled Expert Testimony. Most of you have seen this. We heard from Lieutenant Thad Peterson last November or December. He spoke about, from the Michigan State Police, he spoke about the reasons why speed limits are safest when established at or near the 85th percentile speed of free-flowing traffic. And that is repeated here along with a sheet from the Institute of Transportation Engineers, which I passed out at a different meeting. So that's document number two. Third is entitled 70% of other states post urban speed limits of 65, 70, 75, or there's even one at 80 miles per hour for urban interstates. So, yes, there are a few states, it's 35, it's not 50. There are some states below, but a substantial majority of states have limits at or above 65 in their cities. And I would submit this as a third piece of evidence why you should be skeptical of any limit that is proposed that's below 65 or 70 miles per hour. The last thing, the last document is, again, taken from the speed study results. It's what it is, it's a copy of IDOT's speed limit establishment methodology, which CDM Smith refers to throughout their report. And like every speed settings policy around the world, it begins with the 85th percentile speed, the prevailing speed, the top of the pace, things like that, basically on the premise that people drive at speeds that they feel to be reasonable and comfortable, no matter what number you put on the signs. So that's how it starts, and then it includes a number of optional adjustment factors that can be applied, which exist to give the engineers an opportunity to be engineers and exercise some judgment. And we don't object to that. We think that there should be some latitude for the engineers to be engineers. What we object to is that the policy grants some latitude, but the way that these adjustment factors, which again are optional, the way they've been applied is very mechanical, using a formula that's on the last page, and it takes us from a prevailing speed of 70 miles an hour on all of these roads to a recommended limit that is at the 20th percentile speed, kind of in the middle of this last document. Is a table shows the prevailing speeds on the top, 70 for all but one segment, which is 65. At the bottom, it shows expected violation rates at different speed limits. The violation rate expected at a 60 speed limit is 80%. So you're going to define 80% of your customers as lawbreakers.
This is page 10 of this document.
I'm sorry.
Page 10 of this document, is that what you're referring to? I just don't.
It says results at the top of the page.
Yeah, page 10. Thank you.
I think you look at this and we start with the prevailing speed of how fast cars are going, and we end up with a recommendation after applying these factors of a 20th percentile speed, which says to me that there needs to be a little bit more judgment applied here. And I really believe the engineers are trying to do the right thing. I think they're smart and well-meaning people. I think what's happened is that this policy, if you look at the first page of it, it came out in January of 2014. It's relatively new. It's possible that the engineers misinterpreted exactly what IDOT's intent was. They know that they have to get IDOT to approve whatever you all approve, and they don't want IDOT to kick it out. So they took the most conservative possible application of taking by stacking all the adjustment factors and going from, you know, essentially 75, which is what U.S. Limits 2 is recommending, to 60. There's a couple of things in here, a couple of clues as to what the, I know I'm running probably a little bit over, but if you look at page 5 of the policy itself, this is one of the things I discovered later, so it isn't marked in your handout, but it says, if the anticipated violation rate exceeds 50%, the proposed altered speed limit should be revised 5-mile-per-hour increments upward until the expected violation rate is less than 50%. Now, that is in the non-interstate section of the policy, but I think it gives us a clue as to what the intent was in the policy overall in terms of IDOT wanting the engineers to apply some good judgment and to not, they're saying don't even end up with a 50th percentile speed. What you're getting is a 20th, which is, I think, just, I see Paul Kovacs here, I don't know if John Bendis here, but I'd be shocked if Paul could stand up in front of a group of his peers and say that a 20th percentile speed limit is the safest possible limit to have in on your tollway system. I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I'd be really surprised if you could say it in that way. It sort of cuts through everything. So, one other thing, there's a mention of the use of design speed in the CDM Smith report, which is a reason that they're using to keep all of 294 basically at 60 miles per hour. And they're saying that that's a matter of policy. In the improper adjustments, sorry about the bluntness of the heading on that, but we sort of critique all the individual adjustment factors. But more to the point, in my copy, which I got from the engineering studies of the Illinois, the IDOT speed setting policy, there's not one word about design speed in there, unless there are missing pages. But it's just not there. So I'm not sure where that comes from. It also wasn't a problem in 1959 when the tri-state was posted at 65, according to the ancient news clipping that's on the second page of the third page of your attachment. So I'll close just with because you're going to be, if you pursue a 70 mile per hour limit or even 65, I'm sure that you'll be challenged with, you know, statements like you don't understand the laws of physics or, you know, speed kills, things like that. The reason faster can be safer is that 80 to 90% of drivers are going to go at what they think is a safe and comfortable speed, no matter what number is painted on the signs. People have been driving at 70 to 80 miles an hour on these roads since the 50s, no matter what the speed limit sign said. The problem is that a few drivers, I passed a first student van this morning, like it was standing still, he was going 55. He should be allowed to do that, and frankly, he has to do that because he's a student driver in driver's ed. But folks that are going at the limit, they're a danger to themselves and to others because of all the weaving and so forth. The second issue is that if you post the whole area at 55, 60, even 65 to a lesser extent, you lose the ability to tell people when they really should slow down. I'm sure there are segments of the roadway where there's a hidden hazard or some reason why 55 or 60 or 65 is an appropriate speed, but warning speed, if you will, is already higher or the same as the blanket limit across the overall area, you lose the ability to tell people that there's something different here. And they're just going to keep on going 70 or 80 unless they're the rare individual who actually sees that hazard. So I'll end it there. I'm sorry I went a little over time. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. And I'm sure Christy doesn't want to have her recommendation shot down as opposed to maybe deferred. I would suggest, I know Senator Oberweis is seeking a summit in Springfield to bring together the leaders of IDOT, the tollway, and perhaps the Transportation Committee to try to work through some of this. So maybe instead of, I would ask you not to pass, either deny or defer the recommendation, which is for mostly 60 or 55 limits. The only 65s, mostly 60 or 55, the only 65 are in areas that I think are nearly rural, and none are at 70. And give an opportunity for this to be taken another look at. If the new head of IDOT were to explain the intent behind some of these adjustment factors and how they're to be applied with engineering judgment, maybe there's a way that through clarification that a different conclusion could be reached.
So we thank you very much, Mr. Doner, for coming in. And we're going to debate this later, and it's really helpful to have your presentation of the facts from the perspective of Neil and the people who have a different point of view from the recommendation. I think that's always very important to having a good discussion and a good debate. So I had a couple of questions, but are there other people who have questions? We just got some of this material, some of it we've seen before.
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer questions now, or I think I emailed every. I try to email everybody. I think there's probably more people here than are on the board of directors' email distribution. But
I have three quick questions.
Yeah.
At the end of the first packet, which is I guess the federal study that you pointed out. On that
US
last page, they talk about this. It looks like what they're talking about is the methodology that they've used is, in the last sentence on the top, one key metric, the 85th percentile. So this study is really looking at that one key metric, is this right?
Oh, I'm sorry. The last two pages of that handout, that is actually a news clipping from the Chicago Tribune from about a year ago, and that's simply there to show what the 85th percentile speeds are.
Well, then, I guess what I'm asking is the U.S. DOT, when you say this heading calls for the 70 to 75, is this the 85th percentile metric that they're using to call for?
Part of it is one of the inputs, but the other information on each of these pages is where RWA Smith input tollway specific data for each segment, which includes the probably includes the 85th percentile. I don't know what all the inputs are. It looks like the 50th percentile is another one. But towards the bottom, you can see that the crash rate is one of the inputs.
Okay, so we're to read this to understand that they've used similar or the same metrics that our engineers have used and come to a different conclusion. I just need to understand what the point of this is.
Yes and no. The difference is that some of the adjustment factors that the engineers applied that are allowed but not required under IDOT policy, and the one that stands out as the most frankly absurd in my mind is that if traffic travels at 45 miles per hour or less, or more than 4 hours per day, then you can adjust the limit downward. I forget by how much.
Okay.
That's one of the factors, and that's completely opposed to the standard of that you look at free-flowing traffic under good conditions.
But it is one of the variables. I'm just speaking of the non-engineers, right?
That's an input the engineers use, but it's not allowed to put into U.S. limits too.
Okay.
So,
but as a non-engineer, I think what I'm hearing is engineers under different circumstances use different variables to conclude what's safe, right? The engineers that did this study use a set of variables, and some other engineers have used a different set of variables.
Yes.
Okay. I'm coming from a layperson's point of view.
Question,
I just need to understand
it's a fair
what the
question,
point of
this
is.
I think this was developed by some of the best traffic engineering minds in the nation, and it's out there for two purposes, really. It's for cities and states that don't have a significant engineering staff to actually use it to set their limits. It's also there as a cross-check for groups like this to say, When we came up with 60, but this is 75.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that you're presenting it to us for that purpose. I was just trying to understand if we're measuring apples to apples, and I think we are. It's just when they're, when the engineers are looking at the apples, they're interpreting them differently, right? Or concluding something different, right? So then my second question is, in looking at, at these other states, and again, I just glanced at this quickly, are there other states in the Midwest who are at the 70, 75 range? It looked just, again, just quickly to me as if there were, when you say there are 35 states with urban speed limits of 65 or
higher. Yeah, well, Michigan is at 70 throughout the Detroit area, for example. Atlanta is not necessarily the Midwest, but it's not Utah. It's a big city like ours. There's a 12, I've got a picture at home of a 12 lane, six per side, a thoroughfare through the city of Atlanta that's posted at 70. So that's a more recent change. It's listed as 55.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question, and maybe this is better directed at Paul or our engineers, but you can answer it if you like. You're talking about the relationship between the intent of the IDOT policy and what we do here today. If I understand the sequencing right, whatever we do today is then subject to review by IDOT?
That's correct.
So they will be, again, from a layperson's point of view, they will be interpreting their policy, and then, so we don't need to understand the intent. I'm always loath to look at intent anyway, because I think there are lots of different ways that people interpret intent of a policy. But they will actually have to take this policy of theirs and apply it to whatever we do today. And if they say, for example, that they think our engineers have done something which was a misinterpretation of their policy, what happens next? Do they send it back to us and say, you didn't do it right? I mean, I guess I need to understand how that works.
They most certainly will.
Okay. So while, go ahead.
Pardon me for being skeptical, but I would say...
You're welcome. But you have to stand closer to the mic if you're being skeptical.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think where you're going is that you could go ahead and approve today and see if IDOT passes it or not, and I would encourage you to not do that, only because I would think that they're not going to want to. It's going to be harder for them to say you posted a limit too low. You're recommending a limit too low, and say no, you should bring it up to 70 or you should bring it up to 65. Then if you go into them with 70 and they say no, that's too high.
Well. Just to be the devil's advocate, the way the process looks like it's designed to work is that that's exactly what their job is to tell us whether what we've done comports with their policy. So I would hope that we all go into this, whether there's going to be a summit or whatever there is among the various people, go into this policy relying on the recommendations of the people who have done this analysis for us, with the understanding that the next step in the process is that I got in good faith, reviews whatever we do. We're non-engineers, right? And the reason the process is designed the way it is so that they can inform us if they think that what we've done is inconsistent with the intent of their policy. So I'm just trying to understand how the process reflects on what we do or informs what we do.
I understand. I guess then the other thing I would say is, do you really want to go to IDOT with what may not be your best and final recommendation?
Oh, and I wasn't suggesting that was what we do. I think we will act today on what we think is the best thing to do. I'm just saying the next step in the process is for them to say, we looked at what you did and we don't think you did it right, or we think you did do it right.
Okay.
Right? Okay, were there any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
We really appreciate the time and effort that you put into this. And I think your opening statement is extremely important. We all really are trying to do what we think is the safest thing for the people who drive on the tollways, and we're all addressing that in good faith. And you're coming here and giving us this material really underscores that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have, go ahead. Yeah, this is good. Great. I've already read the name, so this is self-executing, and you can introduce yourself and make your remarks. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Gabriela Garcia. I am here with the representing the Illinois Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. First and foremost, our president and CEO would like to extend his apology for not being here. We do have our membership meeting followed by our board meeting right now, currently in the West Loop. I wanted to share a couple of things, our partnership with the tollway. Since 2013, we have partnered up to design and develop a custom-made program that assists small and diverse businesses in the areas of increasing their capacity and successfully being able to bid and hopefully win tollway projects. Since the development of the program, through our partnership, we have seen an increase of bidding in the small and diverse companies, and they have also been able to successfully complete their projects. Another great thing, the Illinois Hispanic Chamber of Commerce has the U.S. DOT's bonding education program, and the tollway has been of tremendous support through that program for the past 4 years. Just wanted to thank you for your hard work and helping us help small businesses and helping them increase their capacity to successfully be able to bid and win jobs with the tollway. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for coming, and we send our regards to the executive director and the board and understand why they couldn't come today. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Beth Doria. I serve as the executive director of the Federation of Women Contractors. First and foremost, I want to take an opportunity to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, but just to take a moment to recognize Director LaFleur for all of her efforts on behalf of the diverse community that serves construction work within the tollway. I think this board has been very, very proactive and aggressive in addressing a lot of the issues that are presented in the construction industry, particularly on a project such as Move Illinois. I mean, it's a monumental project and certainly has its own challenges, particularly where it comes to diverse companies. And I believe that the board is going to entertain some new initiatives, and I would stand in support of those initiatives. One of the main things that I've been doing this now going on 13 years representing my organization, and throughout those 13 years, on the other side, the prime contractors that I work with are always saying the issue is capacity. It's not so much that we don't want to work with these companies, it's just there are not enough of them that are capable of doing the work at the time that we need them. So I believe that some of the initiatives that are being presented to you today will go a long way toward building capacity and really developing some of those smaller companies into stable, long-lasting companies that really could do projects of this size and help all of us reach the goal of more diverse projects on the Illinois Tollway. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Mr. Israel?
Good morning. I want to thank you for letting me speak in front of you guys, too. And for the record, my name is Robert Bob Israel Baker. It's a long story, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Thank you.
We were fighting with the tollway. I died a long time ago, just a brief history. I actually was just sitting in the Hebrew temple, and Walsh called because they weren't trying to give us no job. They left me my last name. I just looked around and they said, Israel. And they've been calling me Bob Israel ever since. But to make a long story short, I want to thank Gustavo, LaFleur, this board. I heard there's going to be some interesting changes going to come about now. And I'm not going to take too much of your time, but I just want to know the road builders. I know they got a lot to do with this. I don't know if the road builders are represented here, but I heard the road builders got their own agenda. So I was trying to ask you, we might need to bring the road builders to talk to them, because I've been meeting with different agencies. And even though you're going to implement these changes, road builders got their own ideas, and these unions, that's another subject too, because seem like they be discriminated against some people too, but that's another subject. And then Governor Ronda is talking about these empowerment zones. I was wondering if you guys are interested in that, like where some companies don't have to be in unions. I think it's called right to work zones or something, but that's another subject. But I just want to thank you guys for whatever been to be implemented, and I ain't going to take too much of your time. Just look forward to whatever changes finna take place. All right.
I just want to clarify, we are discussing today. I don't know there will be any final action taken on anything today. So
okay.
While I love implementation, I don't think we're at that stage yet.
That's no problem.
Okay.
As long as the conversation got started, I'm happy.
Okay, good. Thank you. So are we. And Mr. Pryor?
All right. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Clayton Pryor. I'm the Director of Workforce Development for the Chicago Urban League. I'm here on behalf of our President and CEO, Ms. Andrea Zopp, and I'm going to read a few remarks on her behalf. The Chicago Urban League works for economic, educational, social progress for African Americans and promotes sustainable communities through advocacy, collaboration, and innovation. Founded in 1916, the Chicago Urban League is one of the nation's oldest and largest community-based movements devoted to empowering African Americans to enter the economic and social mainstream. Through unique community, corporate, and civic relationships, the Urban League helps clients to find jobs, affordable housing, educational opportunities, and grow business. The Illinois Tollway will invest $1.3 billion in maintaining and upgrading the infrastructure of Illinois highways in 2015. Ensuring that there is inclusion of African-American-owned businesses in the procurement process of the spending by the tollway aligns with the Chicago Urban League's mission. We are concerned at the low number of African-Americans that have participated both through contracts and employment. Unfortunately, this is a problem that has been ongoing for many years. Over the past 5 years, just 1.4% of the construction contracts and 1.9% of the professional contracts have been awarded to African-American companies. Through our diversity initiatives, we have become increasingly aware that the more balanced representation of minorities creates an inclusive work culture and workforce strategy that increases your competitive edge. We're in full support of the Tollway's commitment to diversify contracting with new programs that will allow greater access to African Americans and other DVE firms. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. We appreciate your coming. Tell Ms. Zopp, we appreciate her comments. Thank you. Okay, those were the only indications I got of public comment. Is there anybody else here who wanted to speak? No? Okay, thank you. Well, then we'll turn to the approval of the minutes of the regular board meeting, executive session meeting minutes from February 26th. Everybody received those in advance. May I hear a motion, please?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Okay, they're approved. Thank you very much. Now we'll have committee reports. We'll hear first from Chair Peterson, Finance, Administration, and Operations.
Thank you, Chair. The Finance, Administration, Operations Committee meeting took place last week, March 18th. There were one presentation and one announcement. Mike Kelch presented preliminary financial results for the year ending in 2014. For 2014, revenues exceeding estimates by $14 million. Operating expenses were $1 million less than budgeted. Debt service costs were on budget, and capital expenditures were less than budgeted, but still represented the largest annual amount in tollway history. Mike and Kathy are going to provide additional information, excuse me, I believe, in some quarterly investment report updates also later today. Christy had an announcement that there was a new customer contest for safety messages for discouraging dangerous driving and distracted driving and wearing seat belts. And entries, I think, are due tomorrow, the final day, March 27th, and I think the voting starts on April 8th. The finance had one item presented to the committee. The committee approved fourth and final renewal of the Tollway's Liability Insurance Program through Broker USI of Midwest. Coverage includes commercial general liability, business auto liability, and remains the same as the expiring year. The program provides a primary layer of coverage of $20 million per occurrence for general liability and auto claims, subject to aggregate limits of $40 million for auto liability claims. The program also provides excess coverages totaling $130 million. The renewal premium for the program totals about $997,000, a reduction of over $30,000. Procurement presented six items. For the committee, the first item is a request to utilize CMS master contract to purchase police pursuit vehicles for District 15. Specifically, the recommendation is to purchase 82 Ford Interceptors and 10 Dodge Chargers. These vehicles are all replacement units and will meet the tollway's replacement criteria. The second item is an award to purchase a web-based plan room and on-call printing services. The service is utilized in the engineering department to advertise all construction projects. The third item is a renewal of email distribution services. This includes the sending of newsletters, traffic, construction alerts via email to more than 3.7 million iPass users and other interested subscribers. The fourth item was the purchase of the Red Hat JBoss software maintenance and support. This software will be used for the tollway's new back office system, which is expected to go live later this summer. The fifth item is an award for miscellaneous electrical supplies. The contract will be utilized as an as-needed basis to enable tollway personnel to maintain all areas of the tollway's buildings and equipment. The sixth and final procurement item is the purchase of a computer-aided dispatch system, software maintenance enhancements. The system is used by the tollway to track incidents that occur on the roads. When an incident is reported by the public at the Star 999, service or outside public agencies, including local police and fire departments, the dispatcher logs the incident into the CAD system and notifies the appropriate personnel. Engineering presented 18 items that were reviewed. These items are consisted of the following. There were 10 construction contracts. Two of these were advertised as part of our small business set-aside program. One is for a boiler replacement of Ford maintenance facilities. One is for a replacement and modification of the air handling unit at the Central Administration Building. One is for the upgrade of the ramp queue detection system, CCTV cameras, and dynamic message sign on the northbound approach to Grand Avenue. One is for a roadway repairs between Rockton Road and Cherry Valley Interchange. This contract provides for pavement markings, installation, guardrails, lighting, and drainage repairs, approximately $3.3 million awarded to William Charles Construction. One is for the westbound lane Irene Road entrance ramps and the eastbound Irene Road ramps. Complete the interchange work will include electric toll plazas, about $6.9 million construction bid awarded to William Charles Construction. One is for the reconstruction of the Garden Prairie Road and Anthony Road crossroads. This is a bridge project over I-90. F.H. Passion, S.N. Nielsen, was awarded low bid of $7.7 million. One is for the replacement of the Mitchell Road crossroad bridge over I-88. The low bidder was Hurley Mid-Continent at $3.8 million. One is for fiber optic system relocation in support of construction contracts from Pan Oceana Engineering. And one is for the Wooddale Crossroads Bridge overpass. Low bid was to Dunnett Bay Construction, Plody Construction, a joint venture of $9.9 million. One is for the road and bridge rehab work at Lake Street and Meacham and Medina Road over 390. R.W. Dunneman was awarded, low bidder, $17.6 million. There was one professional service contract added for design upon request services associated with maintenance facilities and site plans, along with one supplemental for additional design services to repackage the previous construction contract for resurfacing, shoulder construction, and bridge rehab work. Two construction change orders and extra work orders were presented, one extra work order to reconstruct 820 feet of single-phase concrete barrier along the right edge of the shoulder, to the west of the bridge carrying Illinois Route 390 over Meacham and Medina Road. The tollway did modify the standards here, and it was upgrade standards, hence the extra additional money. One other change order was for the hall to place the excess suitable materials proposed embankment location northeast corner of Thorndale Avenue and Arlington Heights Road. That was another tollway modification, and that was approximately $284,000. One partial release of retainage was reviewed. Remaining work will be completed this spring, and four final releases of retainage were also presented to the committee. Two additional items will be presented to the full board later today. One is for a construction contract, which is item 4 in the agenda, and one is a land acquisition activity, item 20, which will be presented in executive session prior to the full board action. Legal had 9 items were presented. The first one was an intergovernmental agreement with the Village of North Aurora in Aurora Township. The intergovernmental agreement outlines the party's maintenance responsibilities, which will be split between the village and the township. The second IGA was with the River Valley Metro. The intergovernmental agreement is with the River Valley Metro, public Kankakee area bus service. The tollway will provide the public transit service with non-revenue transponders, which expected basically a cost of annual around $6,000. The tollway will receive in-kind consideration, which includes advertising space on the sides of the buses. The tollway will reimburse for the cost of the design, production, installation of the ramp. This is a 5-year initial term contract. The third IGA was with Northern Illinois University. This agreement was for the transfer of approximately 25 retired tollway-owned Illinois State Police laptop computers to the NIU Police Department, which does not presently have vehicle computers. As consideration, NIU will provide the tollway with advertising space in the school newspaper. Item 4, IGA with the City of Lockport and Lockport Township Park District. This is an intergovernmental agreement where the tollway is transferring approximately 1 acre of excess property to the City of Lockport for the Planning Corporation into a park. Item 5 is BP Products North American General Utility Agreement. Has installed pipelines on or near the tollway right-of-way and must be relocated, protected, or otherwise modified as a result of tollway improvements. Item 6 is an AT&T General Utility Agreement. Installed communication cables and or near tollway right-of-way, which must be relocated, protected, or otherwise modified as a result of the tollway improvements. Directors were previously briefed on items 7, 8, and 9. Additional discussion on these items may take place further at this meeting, and all the items discussed above are on today's consent agenda for questions or reviews going further. Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Okay, and the Customer Service and Planning Committee, Chair Rose.
Thank you. The Customer Service and Planning Committee met on March the 12th. The first item that we took up was the speed limits that we heard a little bit about today when Mr. Donner was in here. John Benda from the Tollway and John Bachmuth from CDM Smith were here and presented an analysis and review of the presentation of the proposed speed limit increases that we have before the board here today. The committee took a look at the recent legislation as well as the engineer analysis and the criteria that went into that, and I think a rather robust discussion was had trying to break down and understand the criteria and the impact that it had on the adjustments. For the purposes of the full board's benefit, there's going to be a similar presentation that's presented in a little bit so that everybody has the benefit of that knowledge as we go forward in making these decisions. The next thing we turned to was sustainability policy. As you know, under the leadership of Director Wisner, the tollway has taken up the issue of putting in place a sustainability policy that governs our operation, making sure that our operations are conducted in a green manner that's consistent with all of the efforts that we've made in our construction to be green and environmentally sensitive. At the January meeting, there was a copy of the proposed policy that was put out. I think everybody received a copy of that at that point. That then went out to the public for comment and came back to the committee this month for our review. Based on the comments that we got from the committee in January, as well as the public comment that we received, and we received responses from the Morton Arboretum, the Forest Preserve District of DuPage County, North Central College, the US EPA, Friends of the Forest Preserve, that's Cook County, and then there were also a private consultant offering input. Based on that, there were slight changes made, and at that point, the policy was passed by the CSP committee and is now in position for implementation and moving forward to guide operations here at the tollway. So you might say, that's a full day, but we weren't done. We also took a look at excess right-of-way and annexation policies. Staff, this was originally brought up to the committee in November, and the issue that prompted this discussion was taking a look at what the policy is or policies are that the tollway has in place for determining where we have excess real estate, and we have a number of municipalities that want to come in and annex part of our property. What's the criteria that we're going to utilize in doing that? And so a proposed policy was put out, and recognizing that when we come in and either build or expand a tollway road, it has the potential for increased economic and uses that are beyond what may have been in place at the time that we entered that area. So the proposed policy that the committee reviewed takes a look at criteria such as existing tollway needs for that property, existing land use and proposed future use of whatever that land may be, the economic impact that could result to the community as a result of any transfer, the tax benefit, as well as taking a look at the consequences, the potential traffic consequences and toll revenue assessments. The proposed policy was then, after review and discussion by the committee, laid out, and it is going out for public comment. Normally, we engage in a 21-day process for public comment. We decided to expand that because of the nature of this policy to 60 days, and anticipate that we'll be in position to further review and potentially take action at the May committee.
And all the board members have seen that, and we welcome, obviously, and encourage their comments as well.
Is that a statement or a question? I agree with it if it's a question. I agree with it either way.
Good. Thank you. Anything else?
No. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Chair Reddick. I just have five quick things. The first is you will see over there, and I hope you'll look at it after the meeting or during the break, a map from 1959-8-something. The director, Sweeney, who knew he went to flea markets, found, is that right?
Me and Judy Barr used to go around together.
Oh, good, okay. Went to a flea market, and I want to thank Wendy and Marlene, I think, who in the communications office figured out how to mount it, and we're going to hang it over in the office over there. So thank you to Director Sweeney. It brings us back to our roots. You'll see it's a little bit of advertising and a little bit of information. The second thing is I want to thank Christy and Mike Stone and Mike Kelsch, who went to Springfield yesterday and testified, or appeared, I guess, before the Appropriations Committee. I think we don't necessarily, as board members, know the activities that go on in relationship to Springfield, so I just wanted to thank them for doing that. The third thing is we've heard a little bit from our public comments about the diversity presentation, and I just wanted to remind everybody that this presentation today is in response to some remarks by the board, but I want to underscore that I think what we had heard as board members in those initial comments were that we've made really substantial and substantive progress in the diversity area over time. This is one tweak that we want to start to make, or one issue that we want to look at in terms of African American and other participation, and see if we can actually improve on what seems to be already a substantially improved process. So I don't want to leave the impression that this is in any way a reflection on the progress that has already been made, because I think that's been great. And also just acknowledge and thank the staff for the quick turnaround on this. I think it was last meeting or the meeting before where we really started talking about this. And these are just ideas that we're throwing out, we're going to talk about today, but the fact that you've taken the time to do the research and put together these proposals and ideas, I just want to thank you for that. Fourth, next to your place is the governor's ethics order that he promulgated with a little addendum memo about its application. I just would encourage everybody to look at that. As you know, we have Lisa Williams, who's our ethics officer, who would be happy to answer any questions about any of the changes in the order, and I encourage you to review it and make sure that everybody's aware, since the filing of the new statement of ethics is due May 1st, and we should have all gotten that. Just make sure that you've reviewed it so you know what belongs in this now. And then finally, the Inspector General, Jim Wagner, is going to make his presentation today. I just want to acknowledge that he was available in executive session on personnel matters at the last board meeting, so any board members who had specific questions about any of these cases had an opportunity to go in depth with Jim on that. So just for people who will be watching the exchange today, it may look as if the board is passively receiving his report. We are doing that today, but we did have an opportunity as board members to question him very closely on some of these cases when he presented to us in executive session under the Open Meetings Act personnel exemption. So just wanted not to have that look misleading. So now that's me, Christy.
Great, thank you. Just a couple of quick updates, and then we can get into what is actually a fairly substantial list of presentations and hopefully some good discussion that we'll have today's meeting. First, we have some open houses coming up on I-90. As you all know, certainly, and frankly, a lot of people in the region know, we are rebuilding I-90 and have opened the first phase and now are moving to the eastern section. We always like to involve the community and make sure people have an opportunity to come and ask questions or raise issues. Rocco and his team do a very good job at organizing that. So we will have two open houses on the ongoing Jane Addams project, and those are starting as early as tonight from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Hoffman Estates Village Hall. The second meeting is going to be April 8th,
from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Des Plaines Public Library. So opportunities for members of the public or others to come and hear what's going on, but also, of course, raise any issues or ask any questions. And again, thank you to Rocco and his team, who I know do a great deal of work to try to put these together and provide this opportunity. So, Illinois Route 53-120 project. For those of you who haven't heard, and I'm not sure who that would be either, we're very pleased to say that the Finance Committee that was convened as part of that project has now voted on and provided a report on their activities for the board's consideration. So this was the committee that was charged with coming up with the recommendations of how the project would be paid for and what initiatives they could support in advancement of the project if it was to advance. So the final report, which was completed at the last Illinois 53-120 Finance Committee meeting on March 12th, encompasses all the work and deliberation of that committee, and I really encourage you. I believe that these documents were maybe at your places or have been provided to you.
We got them, I think, both through email, and they're here in hard copy.
So I really encourage you to take a look if you haven't had a chance to review the report, to take a look at it. These same documents are actually posted on the Tollway's website, so of course anyone can take a look at them if they're so inclined. I think that we plan to discuss the project at either a future board meeting or a committee meeting, or committee of the board, but you know, ultimately, we really thank all of the members of that committee. Many mayors, elected officials, others gave their time on this effort, and the chairman of Lake County, Aaron Lawler, really did a tremendous job of, in his leadership of the effort, and the co-chair, George Ranney, co-chair of the BRAC, was also very, very engaged. So we're very happy to have that work completed, and now on to the next step.
Can you remind us, there's one other committee that's still considering?
There is. So under CMAP's banner, the land use, as you may recall from the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council or BRAC recommendations, there were two committees that were recommended, or two kind of next steps to advance work. One was, of course, the Finance Committee to really dig into and resolve these issues around closing the gap on financing. And the other was land use. The BRAC recommended that, you know, land use planning and a coordinated land use plan for the area that may ultimately see 53-120 constructed was very important. So that work is ongoing. I don't know if we have a sense yet of the timing of when that work will be done.
Late summer, likely.
So that work is ongoing and really being led by CMAP because they're the experts when it comes to that type of planning. But ultimately, we would expect those recommendations to, you know, dovetail with whatever future plans for the project.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, I know that the representatives of the Finance Committee from that project had come and updated us a couple of times. It was very much appreciated. But the recollection I have is that after the last time, it was still referred to as a gap in terms of local financing, et cetera, or making a plan that would cover what was necessary. And so this report that we have, is that basically, does it constitute a final recommendation?
It certainly is, and I think it's very close to the recommendations that they presented in their last update. So many of the initiatives that they I think are presenting as kind of the local portion of the project's financing or the local contribution to the project are the same as were presented. Some require legislative action in Springfield, for instance. And then I think, you know, just generally there still is a, you know, gap that remains on the project, and I think they've, you know, articulated in this report, you know, generally what they could support or would be of interest to them, but ultimately a gap remains on the project. So I really, again, encourage all the board members to review the document. I know that at some future point when we discuss it, I'm sure that Chairman Lawler and others potentially will be able to talk about it or answer any questions, but I think, you know, from the last presentation, I think the feedback we heard from all of you was that it did sound like significant progress was made, but a funding gap does remain on the project.
Thank you.
And is there a likelihood that the representatives will come before us at another time, or is...
Oh, I think that we would, whenever, however this is, however we decide to advance it, whether it ultimately moves to another full board meeting, or, you know, is in a committee meeting, we would certainly invite and want to invite the members of the Finance Committee and leadership to come and actually present what's in the report, similar to what we've done previously, and then, of course, you know, the board hopefully would engage in some discussion at that point, and we could determine what, if any, next steps would be appropriate.
So may I just take a sense of the board, whether or not it goes to a committee first, is it the sense of the board that you would like the full board to have them come back and answer questions on this and present it?
You might consider.
Okay, I just want to make sure, I mean, and we'll figure out whether it makes sense to go to the committee first or whether people are familiar enough with it that we can just bring it to the full board. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Now I'd like to introduce Mike Kelch, who's going to give us a quarterly financial review. This has been, I think, abbreviated version of what was presented at the Finance Committee for our fourth quarter results. I don't know that any of this would be that surprising since we did go through a budget process at the end of last year, but ultimately this is part of the reconciliation that we do always go through. I'm sure Mike could say something here, some nugget of information.
Thank you, Christy. Good morning, everyone. And the best part about this report, I suppose, is that there are no surprises. As Christy mentioned, the results, Director Peterson earlier this morning, the results for 2014, preliminary and unaudited, because we are still going through the process of preparing the audited financial statements, which are likely to be around out sometime in late June. Is our goal for the audited financials. But with respect to the preliminary results, revenue $1,036,000,000, really a result of toll revenue being greater than anticipated when compared to the estimate that we did in October in preparation for the 2015 budget. It's just really a reflection of strong commercial and passenger vehicle traffic during the fourth quarter. Maintenance and operations, if you recall, we requested a $3.5 million supplemental in October to offset or to accommodate some of the winter-related costs that were out of the ordinary from last winter, the start of 2014. We did spend a large portion of those funds, but we did come in about $1 million less than what was budgeted in October. Capital program really was on track as well with the estimates in October, about $67 million less than the revised estimate. Some of that due to the fact that we received intergovernmental reimbursements that we don't budget for, as well as some project cost savings and minor schedule changes. Most importantly, I think it's the highest annual spending by the Illinois Tollway on construction in its history. And the detail for the revenue, as you can see, $10.7 million positive variance for toll and evasion recovery, and then $3 million of miscellaneous, primarily related to some fiber optic agreements that we were able to execute earlier this year. And the commercial vehicle traffic and passenger vehicle traffic, good, strong growth during 2014. As I mentioned, maintenance and operations budget, $1.1 million less than what we had. The actual was $1.1 million less than what we had budgeted. Really a result of the variances in contractual services were down relative to the original budget. That's something that we anticipated. Some of the consulting and maintenance contracts got later starts than what we had anticipated at the beginning of the year. That was beneficial to us in that we were able to reallocate those funds to parts and fuel, materials and operating supplies, and as well as some variance in utility costs. With respect to the capital program, I mentioned $67 million less than what we estimated in October. About $36 million of that relates to scheduling issues about $15 million for intergovernmental agreements, and the remainder is our projected project cost savings relative to what we had contracted for. Overall, you can see here, going back to 2005, so we pared out the last 10 years as opposed